First reading today is coming from Isaiah, chapter 9, verses 1 through to 7. Isaiah, chapter 9, verses 1 through to 7. Nevertheless, there will be no more gloom for those who were in distress. In the past he humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. But in the future he will honour Galilee of the nations by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of the deep darkness, a light has dawned. You have enlarged the nation and increased their joy. They rejoice before you as people rejoice at the harvest, as warriors rejoice when dividing the plunder. For as in the day of the Midian's defeat, you have shattered the yoke that burdens them, the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor. Every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning, will be fuel for the fire. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. Our second reading today comes from Matthew, chapter 4. 12 to 14, 12 to 17, sorry. Matthew chapter 4, 12 to 17. When Jesus heard that John had been put in prison, he withdrew to Galilee. Leaving Nazareth, he went and lived in Capernaum, which was by the lake in the area of Zebulun and Naphtali, to fulfill what was said through the prophet Isaiah. The land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles, the people living in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land, the shadow of death, a light has dawned. From that time on, Jesus began to preach, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven has come near."
All right, well, hey, church, I'm loving the fact that we're kind of getting up to that summer holiday period. And as James said before, and there's probably a few of you guys on holidays already, which is kind of crazy. But let me tell you about one of the things I love actually about the summer holidays. And for me, one of the things I associate with summer holidays is actually watching summer holiday movies, right? You know, just catching up on movies you've missed or whipping out some of the classics. Is there anything more kind of classically Christmas than watching a movie like maybe Home Alone? Does anyone watch that every Christmas? I mean, I watch it every so often and it's still a good movie. But I think more recently though, I've noticed that there's a lot more movies that get commonly watched at Christmas that aren't really technically Christmas movies. For me, growing up, we always had this debate about whether The Sound of Music or Mary Poppins was the better movie to watch at Christmas. I don't know if you have that debate. Some people I hear around the trap say that Die Hard is actually the greatest Christmas movie ever. Any other Die Hard fans out there who kind of want to see something a bit more gruff and tough? Okay. For me, I like some of those comforting classics. For me, The Lord of the Rings, right? Like, summer's literally the only time that you'll ever be able to watch The Lord of the Rings because it literally will take you all summer to get through them. But that's what I love. The Lord of the Rings will never grow old. I think there is, though, something comforting about watching some classic movies, about some stories, watching about how good overcomes evil and how the light overcomes darkness. And in some funny way, I think there's something behind these stories and these movies that capture something of the Christmas spirit. You see, part of the thing about Christmas is that Christmas is not just an event. It's not just a festival. Christmas is a story. It's not just the festival of lights and presents and Santa, but especially if you're a Christian, I know, many of you here are Christian, you know that this is the Christmas story, story of hope, a story of joy, a story of light overcoming darkness. So in this series, Unwrapping Christmas, we're going to take a bit of a trip through the Christmas story and to really show how the Christmas story really, that is the ultimate story. It's the ultimate story of good overcoming evil and of light overcoming darkness. And it's not fantasy or fiction. In fact, it's real. It's the only reason for hope in our dark world. Now I reckon as we do this, as we flip the Bible open, looking at Christmas, hey, I reckon this is one of those things, one of those events, one of those moments where, well, our Christian holiday overlaps with a secular holiday and all the symbols and stories kind of overlap and cross. And so I reckon it's a great time to be inviting friends along. You know, maybe they can't make the carols, but maybe they'll come along to church. Because as we do unwrap Christmas, we're going to be discovering more and more about Jesus and about this Christmas story that is, well, it's probably still somewhat in the consciousness of our society, but it is slowly getting forgotten, isn't it? Getting forgotten and replaced by other stories. So let's get stuck into this story and let's unwrap Christmas and understand the bigger picture of what's going on with this Jesus Christmas story. Now, we're actually going to start 700 years before Christmas. That is 700 years before Jesus, right? You know, this is a bit like the flashback at the start of the movie that kind of just helps you understand the full context of what's going to happen. And so the reason we're going back 700 years is because there were some words spoken 700 years BC before Christmas that helps us understand Christmas. Now, we're actually going to be starting at that passage from the prophet Isaiah. Now, what's happening is that Isaiah is a guy who's speaking in southern Israel, southern ancient Israel, probably 720-ish BC. But he is speaking to a nation that's actually in a lot of trouble, in a lot of trouble. But he's offering them some hope as he looks out to the future. Do you see that in verse 2? The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. All right, so let me tell you what's going on here. Israel is currently split into two kingdoms, a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom, right? But it's a nation overall that's under a great amount of stress, right? So there's a mighty, very powerful empire called the Assyrian Empire, which is knocking on Israel's doorsteps. And the king of southern Israel is called King Ahaz. Now, something that he does in an effort to try and stave off Assyria, to try and stave off a bunch of their other enemies, he actually makes an alliance with Assyria. He doesn't just make an alliance with Assyria, but actually he starts to import their foreign religion and their foreign gods into Israel. In fact, he's so impressed by these Assyrian gods and the power of this Assyrian empire that he just seems to that they seem to grant this power to Assyria. And so he actually shuts down the temple in Jerusalem and he starts worshipping this Assyrian god. So just have a look at this. This is a little account about King Ahaz in another part of the Bible. In his time of trouble, King Ahaz became even more unfaithful to the Lord. He offered sacrifices to the gods of Damascus who had defeated him. For he thought, since the gods of the kings of Aram have helped them, I'll sacrifice to them so that they will help me. But they were his downfall and the downfall of all Israel. See, the reason that this is a moment of pure darkness is that here is this king, the king of Israel, who in his moment of weakness, he goes and makes an alliance with the enemy, with Assyria. He then takes on their gods and he tries to sweep Israel of the religion that they grew up with the God of Israel. This is a betrayal on the highest level from the highest, most powerful man in the land. This is like Saruman making an alliance with the Dark Lord Sauron. It's that kind of level of betrayal. And as we all know, when you try to make friends with the enemy, it never turns out well. And in fact, Assyria eventually turns on King Ahaz, and after getting really what they needed from him, they proceed to then go in and destroy Israel. See, life in southern Israel is so very, very bleak. Now, in a normal course of affairs, I'd kind of say, well, you know, that was a very dark moment then, and I'd have to kind of take you to try and help you to kind of see the darkness of what it's like to live in a place that is under impending doom. But I feel like I don't actually have to do that so much this year, do I? You've just spent 2 years under the darkness, under an invisible, microscopic enemy that's taken lives, But I think more than that, you know what, COVID's done interesting things to us because it's divided us, hasn't it? It's created fights, it's turned us against each other, it's turned us into warring tribes. We've fought each other over border closures and lockdowns and vaccine mandates, and we've fought each other over toilet paper. You know, it's funny, isn't it? I've never seen people so quickly turn on each other as we have in this last couple of years. You know, I think that's something of what it's like to be under stress, under pressure, in the midst of darkness. When you're wondering, is there hope? Is there hope for 2023 with this new Omicron variant going around? But I think I'd say more than that, I think in some ways it sheds some light on ourselves as well, doesn't it? See, the darkness isn't just out there. It's not just wars. It's not just viruses. In fact, as I think COVID's helped us to reflect in the mirror, there is darkness within our own hearts too. In fact, one of the claims of the Bible is that we can't save ourselves. Because of that darkness that is in us, we can't save ourselves. In fact, what hope have we got? In fact, all our intellect, all our science, all our progress, and yet we still will fight over a roll of toilet paper rather than leave it for our fellow man. You see, the Christmas story tells us that the darkness will not win. It will not win in the end. Now, it won't win, not because of our intellect, not because of our own moral goodness or our science or anything else. No, he says, actually, the darkness will not win because God will send a light into the world that will overcome the darkness. See, let me just have a look at that verse again. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. See, out of that darkness, out of that dark atmosphere, out of the stress of living in Israel or living in Australia or living pretty much anywhere in the world in 2022, God has promised that there is a light that is dawning on the horizon. Now, I don't know if you've done this sort of thing where you climb mountains to try and get to the top by sunrise. It's a spectacular thing. It's a great thing. You should all definitely go and do it. I mean, I remember there was a moment for me, one of the highlights really of my life actually, climbing Mount Kilimanjaro. And let me tell you, the summit day for that day, you get up at midnight, right? It takes about 5 hours on that last day to get to the summit. And so you sleep for about 3 hours, you get up at midnight, and it is pure darkness, right? You're in the middle of nowhere, climbing this mountain, no more light than the moonlight and your head torch, spending 5 hours just wandering up a dark slope, kind of snaking your way up. Pure darkness is cold, it's about -5 degrees. And I tell you, there is nothing like seeing the first few rays of the sun just as it starts peeking over the horizon. So I tell you, when you're cold, when you're tired, when you're miserable, when you're not sure if you can keep going and make that last stretch to the end, that little light, that little burst of heat, that little burst of the rays on your skin, that little burst of light as it illuminates the landscape around you and you can look around and see the plains of Africa before you, let me tell you, that is the little burst of hope that you need to do that last little bit to make it to the top. And so what Isaiah is saying here in the midst of this tragic situation in Israel is that the light is beginning to peak over the horizon. So look out for it. So what happens as he continues to speak to this nation in southern Israel, he says this: "You," that is God, "has enlarged the nation, increased their joy. They rejoice before you as people rejoice at the harvest, as warriors rejoice when dividing the plunder. As in the day of Midian's defeat, you have shattered the yoke that burdens them, the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor. Every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning, will be fuel for the fire." You see, what Isaiah is saying is that he is bringing God's promise that he will bring rejoicing back to the nation. He will do that by smashing their oppressors. Their warriors rejoice at the dividing of the plunder. The people rejoice as at the harvest. The victory will be so comprehensive that the soldiers' clothing will be able to be burned. War itself will be done away with. You can burn your goods. You can throw away your weapons. because that will be the end. How good would that be if we could say, hey, there will be no more wars? No, we've been saying that for millennia now, that hopefully one day we'll do away with war. No, we'll never do away with war. Not in this world, not in our strength, not in our time. But here's a promise. Here's a little promise that Isaiah makes to this little nation, southern Israel, as it's under pressure. But it's actually a message of hope, not just for southern Israel, it's a message of hope for the whole world. For the whole world. Now, where are you looking for hope right now? Where are you? What are you hopeful for? Are you just hoping that things would go back to normal again? Are you just hopeful that maybe you wouldn't have to QR code in everywhere you go? You know, for me, I just wish and I'm hoping that one day I'll be able to make some travel plans and not be under the threat of having them cancelled at the last minute. But hope, as Isaiah announced, it comes from a very unexpected source, right? Comes very unexpectedly. Come with me in verse 6. This is where hope is found, according to Isaiah. For to us, a child is born. To us, a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders. And he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. See, Isaiah is saying that in place of this corrupt and evil king that you have, there'll be a new king. There'll be a new king, though a child. And through this child king will bring an end to all wars and establish an eternal kingdom based on justice and righteousness. And he'll be this gift to humanity. This gift of this child who will be both human and divine. You know, there is actually nothing else in any other religion or history, anything similar like this at all. This is utterly unique in the history of the world. And this child is given four descriptions. What is he going to be? He's going to be a wonderful counselor. Right? It's a way of saying that actually all our human wisdom, all our human science, all our human intellect is such folly. Leads us into more wars. We are so blinded by our own biases. We see, we find ourselves locked in our own echo chambers. We easily gravitate towards evidence that backs our own point of view, and we discard evidence that doesn't agree with us. I mean, that's the way that the human intellect works. Yet he will be a wonderful counselor, a child king, who will possess true wisdom that offers that to others, who knows that there is strength in weakness, that there is victory in surrender and life in death. He'll be a mighty God. His divinity will grant him powers to do things that nobody else can do. The ultimate symbol that God is with us and that he still cares for us and that he will keep his promises. He has not abandoned us. He'll be an everlasting Father, one who will sit on the throne forever and will ensure everlasting justice and righteousness will reign. That he'll be the final king, the king to end all kings. But he'll be a prince of peace, a peaceful king. When he comes in peace, when he establishes peace, he doesn't establish peace by brutally squashing all forms of defiance. He's not a tyrant. He uses violence or coercion or cancel culture to kind of subdue any opposition. He'll make reconciliation between God and man, and from that will be the basis upon which reconciliation comes between man and man. And he will bring people together, the perfect king, the model king, the servant king, a king modeled after the great King David of Israel's past, an endless rule of righteousness and justice and peace. You know those four little titles. Is an exceptionally awesome and amazing picture, an almost unbelievable picture of what the future hope will be. And you know, church, that's part of the point of this passage, isn't it? That this little ray of hope is meant to inspire such wonder, such love and awe and praise of this child king. And church, as you may know, that there is only one person who can fulfill all of those things. His name is Jesus. His name is Jesus. In that little passage from Matthew that Shannon read out for us earlier, to show that Jesus, he comes and he fulfills the markers of that king. The way that he comes from Capernaum in Galilee. And he comes as this light for the world. It's something that Jesus himself, as he goes and he teaches, claims for himself. In John chapter 8 verse 12, he says this, when Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. You see, if the diagnosis is right, that actually us humans are completely unable to save ourselves, we are completely unable to usher in justice and righteousness and peace into our world, well, then our only hope is from outside. We need a light that comes external to us to save us. And if that is true, then maybe God's right about the solution too, that Jesus is the child king, the God-man, who enters into our world, the light that shows us the truth. In fact, he is the source of all life, the source of truth and beauty. And that hope will not be found in ourselves and our intellect, but actually in the one that God has sent into our world. See, I reckon that's actually maybe one of the reasons that around the world, we are just loving superhero movies right now, aren't we? Loving superhero movies. Right now we can escape, probably about every 2 months seems to be a new one, you can escape into a world in which there is a powerful saviour. One who can solve the biggest problems and face down the greatest enemies and take down the most mighty of foes. You see, maybe we just don't see it in our leaders or our politicians. And maybe if we're honest, we just realise that we don't even see it in ourselves. As we look into the mirror of our own hearts, all we see is darkness there. See, maybe intuitively, somewhere in the shape of these great epic movies, that we recognize there is something of the shape of reality there, of our deep-seated hunger for a happy ending, of our need to experience the supernatural, to beat the great enemy, to stare down death in the face and win. But maybe somehow in some way we know that we're not just going to do that on our own strength, on our own capacity, our own power. We need something, we need someone else to come and do that for us. See, the greatest of stories, the best of blockbusters, the biggest of epics, I think are just little echoes of the ultimate story. The ultimate story of salvation, the one that isn't just fantasy. The story from which all the other stories point. You see, Christmas lights up for me personally, that's something nice, something different. But for my kids, I think they recognize it for what they truly are. Light beaming out through the darkness is a thing of genuine wonder and amazement. And, you know, my soap and water, there's actually some extraordinary Christmas displays in the up already. And, every year we made it a bit of a habit to make sure we get around to see a few of those. Because light shining out of the darkness was with total wonder and amazement is exactly what Christmas is about. See, no matter what's happened in the year, no matter what's going on in your life for you personally, the lights remind us that there is something greater than us, bigger than us, that inspires hope. It's not kind of an unshakable, uncertain hope. It's the hope grounded in the fact that Jesus Christ, the God-man, entered into our darkness, the darkness of our world. In fact, on one night, perhaps the darkest night of all, Jesus faced darkness in an unprecedented way when he was unjustly sent to die on a cross for the sins of the world. And yet just as light can't be conquered by darkness, so Jesus rose again in a blaze of glorious light and triumphed over darkness for once and for all. And that's the reason that we can have peace on earth, confidence in the future. That's how we can be sure about who's in charge and that the person who's in charge is a good and faithful king. See, if you're not a believer here today, I hope there's something that you're seeing there about the Christmas story that's just tugging at your heart. You see, maybe it's time to check out Jesus seriously as an adult. If you keep coming back to this series, we're going to keep unwrapping Jesus over the next few weeks. But don't let another Christmas season go without properly engaging with this Christmas story. Because as I say, if the diagnosis is right about the darkness in our world and the darkness in our heart, and the solution is true about the potential for this light to be that salvation for our world, well, then you've got to check it out. You've got to explore it properly. But for those who are believers today, and you know that that light is the hope of our world, guess what? This Christmas season, you're heralds of that light. You're not the hero, you're not the light, but you can point to people to where they can find that light. I know we've been talking this up a lot. We've been talking about, you know, the fact that we'll be talking it up, the hope of the world this Christmas. And I know it feels like a daunting task. But my encouragement, friends, is to take one step further. Just make one little step of progress. See, maybe it's just taking that one step to actually acknowledge that you're a Christian and you actually celebrate Christmas and that you do the church thing. Maybe for you, it's actually explain a little bit more about what you find great about Christmas that goes beyond the superficial things that our world celebrates. Maybe it's that time that maybe for the first time, make that invitation to carols, that event that people will turn up for because, hey, it's Christmas. That's what you do. You sing carols. You see, there is something that's more important than writing that extra card or making sure you've covered everyone with presents. You see, there is a world out there that is stumbling around in the darkness. And when you're stumbling around in the darkness, there is nothing better than to see the little peaking of the light, that little hope on the horizon.